This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Good morning. Good Thursday to you. It is a throwback Thursday today, but more importantly, it's a Sweet 16 Thursday. The NCAA basketball tournament continuing tonight. Four games on the slate. We'll go over the four games tonight, give you some thoughts on the teams that are still remaining for a chance to win the national championship. But I want to start with NBA because it was a big game last night as the Dallas Mavericks took on Golden State. These are teams middle of the pack in the Western Conference. A little surprising from Golden State, given that they were they're the defending NBA champions. But nevertheless, they're terrible on the road, and they went to Dallas last night to face a Mavericks team that has been reeling a bit. And this Kyrie Luka thing hasn't really worked out the way they want. They've gone backwards in the standings, and so last night was kind of a big game. We only have a handful of games left in the regular season before they start divvying up the prize loot and start giving away your playoff seedings. And if you remember, there's a top eight, and then there's a bottom two, and 9 and 10 have to be in the play-in tournament with the 7 and 8 teams, and they have to win two games in order to advance, where if you're 7 and 8, you win one game and you advance. And so the Dallas Mavericks are finding themselves in that group, right? So these are very critical games. These are somewhat as must-win as you can get for Dallas as they want to try to improve their playoff seeding. So last night was an absolutely wild circumstance that occurred in the game, so much so that Mark Cuban surprisingly had trouble with the referees. I mean, normally he's so quiet about referees. Normally he's so, oh no, the refs do such a great job in this league. Nevertheless, Cuban does what Cuban does, which is he filed a protest. He's angry. He's upset at NBA officiating. He'll get yet another fine. But this one was really weird. This was weird. I'm going to try to set it up radio-wise as best I can, although video would be a lot better. So in the third quarter of the game, with about 2 minutes left to go, Kevin Looney of the Warriors was trying to go for a play, and the ball was batted out of his hands. And the referee on the sideline indicated Golden State ball and then immediately pointed over to the other side to indicate that Dallas had a timeout. So if you picture the referee, he's pointing Golden State to indicate Golden State ball and then does the big, huge point towards Dallas's end of the court. But that is to signal that Dallas had the mandatory timeout. So when they come back out, by the way, Looney then goes over to talk to him, and the referee gives him a small indication that, no, the ball is going this way. It's going towards you. You have the ball. So when the Mavericks come back out, they believed they had possession, and they lined up on their offensive end of the court. But Golden State was all lined up on their side of the court, and there wasn't a Dallas player there. So they just simply inbounded the basketball and scored an easy bucket. There wasn't a Dallas player around. And so all of a sudden, Jason Kidd's going, whoa, 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 what? Wait, what's this? What happened here? We had the ball. And Mark Cuban comes down, and he's talking to the official. He's getting himself involved in this. Whoa, 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 wait. No. We had the ball. Now, Cuban went on the record as saying it was the worst officiating non-call mistake in the history of the NBA. All they had to do was tell us, and they didn't. But in the pool report of the officials afterwards, they said, no, the second signal was for the timeout. We made the signal that it was Golden State's ball. There's nothing wrong here. But Jason Kidd said, this is a matter of communication. He goes, there were quite a lot of people out of position. This is correctable, but you have to admit that there was a mistake. So what his point is if you're the official and you notice that all the Golden State players are on one end of the court and all of the Dallas Maverick players on the other end of the court, and you've never seen anything like this before, should you then say, hold on, guys, this is Golden State's basketball. I don't know what you're doing over there, but this is Golden State's basketball. And maybe just clear it up. instead of just blowing the whistle, handing the ball to Golden State, and they score an easy bucket because there's confusion that is brought on by you, the officials. Now, the officials may say, that's not our responsibility. We call the game, and wherever teams put their players is where teams put their players. But Dallas didn't ask who had possession of the ball because they believed they had possession of the ball. Now, this was a wild play. I mean, this was a wild play. Now, where it becomes really problematic is this ended up being a two-point game, a win by Golden State, a loss by Dallas that is affecting them in a very, very tight playoff race in the Western Conference in terms of seeding. As I mentioned, if you are going to be fighting for playoff spots and playoff seeding, it is to get out of the 10-9 seed so you don't have to win two games in a play-in tournament. You would rather get to a position of the 5-6 spot where you don't have to even be in the play-in tournament at all. And that's where there is between the Phoenix Suns at 4, they are 10.5 games out of Denver. Between them and the LA Lakers at 10, so from 4 to 10, is all separated by 2.5 games. That's it. So you are talking about seven spots separated by 2.5 games. So again, are they must win in that they're all eliminated? No, but they're must win in terms of getting position in the postseason to be where you want to be. This was a critical game because it would have sent Golden State down. It would have brought Dallas up, and Mark Cuban is going to appeal it. He's going to lose this appeal. He's not going to win this appeal. There is clear video of the official pointing that the initial play was Golden State's ball. And he reversed and pointed for the timeout. But Cuban being angry about this, he's going to make a big stink about this. And this is Cuban's MO. He's been doing this for what? How long has he owned the Mavericks? 20-something years? I mean, late 90s? He bought this team. He's been doing this forever.
But he's been so good, Tony.
You know, he complains about this. He complains about the officials. He does more to hurt the product because he's willing to go out on a limb and say things like, these are terrible officials, this is terrible calls. But in the end, he does what he's supposed to do as an owner. He sticks up for his team. He fights for his team. And he fights for Dallas Maverick fans when he feels like there has been some level of injustice. So in one way, he's great because he's the owner that's really passionate and cares. And on the second hand, he probably is a headache for the NBA because they're like, the last thing we need is owners who own this product to be complaining about how it's officiated publicly. Like, instead of coming to us privately saying we need to do a better job, he's willing to go to the press and say, we have terrible officials, and if you buy a ticket to any one of our games, you're probably going to see a crappy officiated game. So I'm sure he's a big headache to Adam Silver in this regard. But nevertheless, I had a couple of questions about this. So I agree with Dallas in a way. I do agree with Dallas in a way. Is it up to the officials to tell the teams make sure the teams understand who has the ball if they make a call? No, I think if you're the teams, it's your responsibility. But I think if you're an official and you're trying to officiate the game in the fairest way possible, right? So you're trying to make the game. If you notice that five players are on one side of the court when they're inbounding underneath the basket on the other side of the court, don't you want to say something? Don't you want to be like, okay, hold on. Obviously, we didn't communicate with you. Obviously, we've made a mistake. You guys are professional basketball players. This is a professional coaching staff. Even if we were playing in an AAU league, I'd probably do this too. But clearly, you guys aren't over there willing to give up a basket to Golden State and just you're being there for strategic reasons. Clearly you're on that side of the court because you believe that you're getting the basketball. So our bad, somehow we miscommunicated this. can we get you guys to understand that Golden State has the ball? I completely understand where they're coming from on that. I think that if you were in the NFL and the offense, if you had the ball, if you signaled first down on a fourth down play and the other team thought it was a turnover on downs and they sent their offense out onto the field because they didn't quite get the signal, right, or whatever, there was a miscommunication. And if you're a referee and you see Patrick Mahomes out on the field when you're like, no, it's a first down for the Bills. What is Patrick Mahomes doing out here? Wait a minute. They got that first down. It's close, but they got it. Wouldn't you go, timeout. Obviously, Andy Reid, you thought that they were stopped on fourth down. I'm sorry. We did not make this clear enough. Bills have the ball, first and 10. Right? You would think the NFL would do that. Why would three referees stand around and go, oh, well, why is Dallas over there? Not one of them thought maybe they didn't quite get the message that it's Golden State's basketball. Instead, they just let Golden State score an easy bucket. But on the other side, where was Dallas? I saw the replay. There wasn't even anybody lined up to inbound the basketball. If they thought they had the ball and they were going to get it, let's say, on the sideline, there wasn't even anybody there to get the basketball. So very confusing. But if this was between the Houston Rockets and the San Antonio Spurs, who cares? But this was a serious, serious game of playoff seeding in the Western Conference. And we'll see if Cuban wins this appeal. But I can almost guarantee you he's not going to. All right, well, we continue the Throwback Thursday of the day, and we'll get to the Sweet 16 matchups tonight in the tournament.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sportsnap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, Throwback Thursday, 1974. Is this Redbone?
This is Redbone.
Yeah, this is from the Guardians of the Galaxy soundtrack.
That's how the kids know it today.
That's how the kids know it. This is the opening song of when he's dancing and kicking those little creatures and getting the loot at the beginning of that movie.
I need to be honest with you. I'm dancing in the studio right now.
Yeah, sure. It's got a catchy beat.
It does. It makes me feel good.
1974 on this date, NC State ends UCLA's streak of 7 national championships. They beat them in double overtime, 80-77. David Thompson led the Wolfpack with 28 points and 10 rebounds. Tom Burleson scored 20, pulled down 14 boards. And UCLA's streak ends on this date in 1974. John Wooden
decided to share.
What a great sports personality, John Wooden. I don't want to say coach. Like, he's a great coach.
No, he has said that.
But you know what I mean? Like beyond UCLA and beyond the championships, like just being a figure in the sports culture, John Wooden was just on top of his own pyramid, right? I mean, he had the pyramid of success. He's one of the tops. I love the story about how every year he'd gather the team and he would teach them how to put on socks. And that was like he believed in that philosophy. Every year you start from the basics, right? So he would be like, we're going to learn to put the socks on. And you put the socks on and you don't make it too tight and you do this. Then we're going to talk about lacing the shoes, because he was like, we're going to start from the very, very beginning. You're all back. And we're going to remind you of the basics. And it wasn't to teach them how to put on the socks. It was just to go back to the very basic, and we're going to build it up again. We're going to start from the bottom and build it up again. We're never going to assume that we're at a certain level when we come back to start the season. And he sort of had that philosophy. And that's how he built his UCLA teams. And he was, you know, just this brilliant coach, but not only that, but his philosophy, things that people remember about him, of what he said and how he coached and how he talked. And I've always thought that the cool people are the ones that, okay, John Wooden never swore. Okay, so he never swore. And he said, goodness gracious sakes alive. That was his term. And if you heard that, that would be the equivalent of Bobby Knight throwing every F-bomb, GD bomb in your face. So if he said, goodness gracious sakes alive, that was his equivalent of an outburst, of an outburst. And you knew you were in trouble. you knew you were in trouble.
Would there be a gas?
Right? Yeah, like they would be.
He said that when people go,
oh, boy.
You know, I had a coach that was like that, too. I had a coach, his thing, I mean, it's funny, but his thing that he always said, instead of swearing, he always went, Jesus, Mary, and Joseph.
Right, yeah, right. So he never went on those rampages, but he just didn't have to. It was the one term, and that was pretty much it. And then you knew, you know, you better get your act together, because John Wooden meant some business. So, 1974, the great North Carolina State beating UCLA. And UCLA, one of the greatest dynasties that we ever had in sports. And John Wooden was behind it. You know, he had Lou Alcindor, he had Bill Walton, he had so many great players in this time there. But 1974, NC State got the better of them, and that's our Throwback Thursday. So we've got Sweet 16 games today. So we've got four of them on tap, including Las Vegas. So they've got the big game, which I'm looking forward to tonight, which is UCLA taking on Gonzaga. They've also got Arkansas going up against UConn, and Arkansas is the 8 seed. UConn, a team that is 4th, but people loved at the beginning of the season. They went 14-0 to start the year. That's going to be a really, really interesting contest. For me, I would lean towards UConn because I think UConn is playing the kind of basketball that you want to play at this time of year. In terms of the NCAA tournament, but Arkansas is scrappy good. And here's the thing. Arkansas has Nick Smith, right? Nick Smith, it was graded out to be an NBA-level prospect. But he had an injury, some inflammation in his knee. It kept him out 19 games. But nevertheless, he's the kind of player that is kind of evaluated as an NBA-level player. They haven't needed him at all in this tournament. They, in fact, in their win against Kansas, Nick Smith was not even present. I mean, he participated in the game playing 16 minutes, but he didn't score any points. All right. Devontae Davis was the guy that led Arkansas to this victory against the Jayhawks, right? Ricky Council was the guy that led this victory over the Jayhawks. So they haven't even needed the NBA level quality that Nick Smith is sort of, you know, has in his repertoire. They have yet to tap into that and still pull this upset off. I mean, it's one thing to say if you're just kind of casually looking at Arkansas and saying, well, Nick Smith got back and, you know, and that's one of the reasons they're finding the success, but they're not needing him. And they're doing it with, again, this team with Ricky Council and Devontae Davis. These guys have been playing all year. So they've been through the ups and the downs of the Arkansas season. But they were just good enough in this game against Kansas. So do they get anything from Nick Smith tonight? He was distraught afterwards in the same way that Arkansas was celebrating in the locker room after the win against the Jayhawks. He was also quite upset that in 16 minutes of play, he was relatively ineffective, didn't score any points, and wasn't really contributing to this Arkansas basketball team. But UConn is really loaded. I mean, they're a loaded team. So I'm looking forward to that. And then the nightcap, I think if all the games in the Sweet 16, and there's some that I'm really interested in terms of how one style of play is going to go up against another style of play. But to me, UCLA and Gonzaga is really intriguing because if you're Gonzaga, you have Drew Timmy, right? And Julian Strother. And you have these two guys that are a frontline force, and you're going to need some help from your guards in this tournament, right? You can neutralize Drew Timmy if you feel like Gonzaga can't do anything with their guard play. You can do that kind of thing, right? That's the Zach Edey thing with Purdue, right? If you can bottle up Zach Edey, you can win your games against Purdue because it forces the other players to do stuff to step up, and it's not easy for them to do. And if you're the Bruins, well, Mick Cronin has got a problem because he's been playing without Jalen Clark, which has been fine for the first two games of the tournament, but you're going to need Jalen Clark as a defensive player, and you can't use him because he's got an Achilles injury. So now you've got an injury to David Singleton, and all of a sudden the Bruins are dealing with some real injuries going into a major game against UCLA. Again, the first two games of the tournament, while we've been saying are tougher and tougher and tougher, the reality of it is this is where the tournament really kind of kicks in terms of, okay, guys, now show us what you have. You can sort of win games if you're one of the top teams in the country in the first two rounds because your teams you're facing aren't formidable. Again, it doesn't mean they can't come up and bite you. I'm not saying, of course, upsets happen and whatnot. But if you survive those, right, you can go, okay, you know, we took care of the 16 seed or the 15 seed or the 14 seed, and then we took care of the 9 seed or wherever else we're playing. But now we're in the Sweet 16, and it's likely we're going up against a single-digit seed that's pretty high up. And in this case, if you're UCLA and you're a 2, you're going up against the 3 in Gonzaga. So this is where really sort of the meat of the tournament is. So, again, you can sort of bypass the Bruins and say, look, yeah, the injury to Jalen Clark, that's going to hurt them. But when is it going to hurt them? And now is the time where that's going to hurt them. And now, again, they're dealing with another injury to Singleton. I mean, this is really fascinating. I mean, this to me is a big, big matchup. Because if UCLA can bottle up Drew Timmy and force Gonzaga's guards to step up, and, again, they're without one of their premier guards in Jalen Clark, this game is going to be really interesting to watch, really interesting. But go back to Arkansas for a second here. Arkansas, under Dave Musselman, and Musselman came in from Nevada. This is the third straight year that Arkansas has gotten to the Sweet 16. So they're a very fine-tuned team when it comes to the tournament. And again, not needing Nick Smith and having guys like Devontae Davis step up, Ricky Council step up, players like that have been really critical to Musselman in his success here. He knows how to coach in this tournament. He's gotten this team not only a Sweet 16, a couple of those trips have been to the Elite Eight. In Arkansas, he's in the recruits that, you know, Arkansas recruits have been fantastic. But again, tonight, he's going up against a team that is a 4 seed, could win this whole thing, and no one would bat an eye. Seriously, if UConn beats Houston, beats Alabama en route to winning the national championship, no one would bat an eye. They're that good. They are that good. All right, we'll continue to look at the tournament on this Throwback Thursday. Also, get some NFL news to get to because the Jets are now doing what the Jets are supposed to do, and we'll tell you what it is next as we continue.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony
1974, D. NC State beats UCLA, stops their run of 7 national championships on your Throwback Thursday. Who's going to cut down the nets in Houston in a little over a week, right? Yep. A little over a week. 10 days?
10 days.
Are we at that 10-day point where we have the... And when they have, I'm so looking forward to going to the Final Four.
By the way,
I'm
have
so
a feeling that
seeing you guys in Houston.
I have a feeling the music's going to be pretty decent today.
Yeah, I do too.
We've already got 2 songs, and we're like, oh, I'm feeling
I'm already
it.
Singing it, and I'm already tapping my feet.
You were full on Redbone in the segment.
I know.
In the break there.
Just going crazy. So I'm looking forward to coming down to Houston next week to be part of the
we're
Final Four.
We're looking forward to having you.
I'm excited. I'm going to see some people, and I haven't been to the headquarters in 10 years with the network, so I'm looking forward to that. I was scheduled to go 3 years ago. Me and the one and only Jake Asman were going to host Selection Sunday, and I was going to have a good time with that and see some people.
There's something that happened that year, though.
Yeah, and then I was all booked and ready to go, and then they were like, yeah, if you got a cold, you might want to stay inside.
And then I remember you and I having the conversation because your wife was suggesting that maybe you don't get on an airplane.
Right, exactly, yes.
And
exactly.
You're like, I don't know, I'll mask up.
It'll be fine.
And I, you know, I remember I was telling my oldest about this the other day. I said, "God, I ran a promo where I was making fun of it."
Oh, sure, yeah. I think we all were.
You remember the whole thing was that, you know, if you came down with COVID-19, you were immediately given a 14-day quarantine. And,
right.
And you and I turned that into, like, it's a 14-day vacation.
Sure, I know, right?
Can you imagine?
God, I remember getting COVID, and I remember being trapped in our bonus room, and my wife leaving just stuff outside, and I would just pick it up, like bags of stuff. And I was just like, I know. So I went from this TV room that we have to my son's bedroom, and that's the only place I could go for like 3 days.
Yeah.
Terrible. Terrible. Like, my wife's like, nope, I'm bringing all your stuff upstairs. We got a little refrigerator in this room. We're going to stock it with your drinks. I'm going to bring you food. That's it. Like, she'd go get takeout, just leave the bag outside the door. I'm like, is my food here? Yes.
Did you guys have a system, like, knock on the door, now wait a minute?
Yeah, now wait. There you go. Now there you go. Your Chipotle's outside. I gained so much weight. She bought me, like, snacks, too. Like, little, oh, you like the orange slice candy. And I was like, yeah. And she had that. Oh, my God. It was ridiculous. I was just sitting there doing nothing, watching show after show after show. Like, you'd think I would have gotten up and, like, I don't know, did some squats or something, like, just to not at all. Not at all. Just sat all day, every day. Wild. That was just 3 years ago. Really. It's one of the things that I was talking about this yesterday, that it feels like, because of COVID, if COVID is in the middle of any timeline that you want to talk about, it makes that timeline feel much larger than it actually is.
Right.
Right. So if you say, wow, that was 2 years ago that Baylor won the national championship, you go, okay, that was 2 years ago, 2021. Right. But if I go, that was 5 years ago in 2018 that UMBC beat Virginia, that feels like 100 years ago, because the COVID year was just extended. If there's a feeling like it was forever and it was so long and we were all shut down and staying home and nothing was open, and there was just this length of time slowed down so much so that you feel like 2 years ago was normal, but 3 years ago was 100 years ago, because it just felt like that year was so long. It really has added, it really has felt like it just added a lot of time. So, but yeah, I was supposed to go to Houston 3 years ago, and then now I'm finally going to get to go down and see everybody and work from the HQ next week, starting on Tuesday, as we get ready to give you Final Four coverage here on Sports Map Radio. So I was talking a little bit about the NCAA tournament. We'll get back to that in a second. So there's no deal yet between the Jets and the Green Bay Packers, right? We've been waiting on that to see where it is. And frankly, this is not one of those everybody stand by, it could happen any second things, because it could happen tomorrow, but it's more likely going to take its time, right? The Jets and the Packers are going to try to work this out, but the Packers can sit back and play this game a little bit longer. And the Jets have to be careful about what they want to do in terms of the things they're willing to give up for Aaron Rodgers, because they don't want to give up everything, because they don't know how committed Aaron Rodgers is going to be at this late in his career. You'd like to think that he would love being a Jet, love New York City, love everything about playing in the AFC, maybe. I don't know. But you don't know. He might get there, hate it. I mean, look, Aaron Rodgers is going from Green Bay, Wisconsin to New York City when this deal is finalized. I mean, that's a gigantic leap. I mean, that's a gigantic sort of environment that he's going to. He may love it. He may love the bright lights of New York City. He may like the bright lights of an invasive media that is just constantly asking him the questions, deep questions that maybe the Green Bay media never asked him. I don't know. But he might love it. He might hate it. And if you're the Jets, you don't know what you're getting. You don't know if you're going to get a guy that's committed for 4 years, 3 years. I mean, the guy's 39 years old, for crying out loud. How much longer is he going to play in the NFL? So what would you give up for a guy that may play 1 year or 2 years, right? That's what the Jets have to go through. They want him, of course. Are they willing to give up four number one picks or whatever ridiculous thing? No, they're not. So they're going to work with Green Bay on this. But yesterday, they added to their wide receiver core by signing Mecole Hardman of the Kansas City Chiefs, and they get him for $6.5 million. And then they send Elijah Moore, a wide receiver, and a third round pick to Cleveland for Cleveland's second round pick. Now, this is really interesting because I think this is currency that the Jets are going to want to use. So they bring in Mecole Hardman, and then they ship Elijah Moore, right? So this, again, as everybody's been pointing out who's covering this story, the best way that it's been put was Rick Cimini and ESPN said this is Aaron Rodgers trade written all over it. Because the Packers are not going to want Elijah Moore, right? So let's say they want to swap wide receivers, right? You bring in Mecole Hardman, you ship Elijah Moore out. Why would you do that, right? Well, you do that because you need to get a pick for the Aaron Rodgers trade. So how do you do that? Well, you don't have Mecole Hardman, right? So you can't trade him if you don't sign him. But when you sign him, it makes a wide receiver expendable. So that's what the Browns want, and you give them a pick, and then you get an asset. So it's ammunition to get Aaron Rodgers, and you get a pick from Cleveland to add to what you could offer the Green Bay Packers. So the Jets are doing everything that you would expect the Jets to do to make this deal happen. And now that the cat's out of the bag, meaning Aaron Rodgers wants to be a Jet, the Jets want Aaron Rodgers, and the Packers were willing to trade based on if the price is right, all of those things are now out in the open. There's no secrecy. There's no waiting in darkness. There's no, oh, we'll see. We don't know. We can't comment. Now everybody is free to sort of say, all right, this is what the plan is all along. The Jets are in that position to say, let's make this happen. What is it going to take? Now, maybe they're getting a sense from the Packers that what it's going to take is a package of picks, right? It's going to take a couple of firsts, maybe a second or two, a third. It's going to take a package of picks. So if you're the Jets, that's what you go after. So what do you have that the Browns want? A young wide receiver and Elijah Moore. What else do they have what else do the Browns have that they want? Well, they'll take a third round pick too. All right. So good. What can you give us? Well, we're going to give you a valuable piece that you can add to the package for Aaron Rodgers. So here you go. Thanks for your wide receiver. Here's our third round pick. Now here's our second round pick. You now have something that you can use. Well, we lost a wide receiver. Well, here's a free agent that's available, Mecole Hardman. Let's get him. So it's ammunition to land Aaron Rodgers, but you're giving up a young wide receiver, right? And by the way, Mecole Hardman is coming off surgery, and he is older than Elijah Moore. So again, why would you do this? Why would you take a guy that's coming off surgery? Why would you take a guy that is, you know, coming back from injury and getting rid of a young wide receiver? Well, by standing pat, you don't have the ammunition that you need to land Aaron Rodgers in the package that you're trying to put together. So the Browns, they don't want to sign Mecole Hardman. They'd rather get Elijah Moore. So here's a second round pick that you're probably going to need to get Aaron Rodgers, but you got to give us something. How about this? Give us Elijah Moore and give us your third round pick. Great. Now here's that tool that you're going to need for Aaron Rodgers. In order to replace Elijah Moore, there's a wide receiver that's a free agent. Sign him to a 1-year deal, even if he's coming out of an injury. And there's going to be injury concerns when he arrives in New York. So it's a move specifically to get Aaron Rodgers. Nothing to do with bettering the team whatsoever. The only reason this deal was done was to get currency to add to the package to get Aaron Rodgers. All right, we'll continue. It's Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio.
Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
We go back to 1974. Is this Gordon Lightfoot?
Yes, it is.
God, I'm just, if there was a way to pat me on the back in this lonely studio, I would do it. Gordon Lightfoot.
Yeah, you know, we don't get much airplay from out of Gordon Lightfoot on the show, so.
You ever heard the song The Wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald?
Yes.
Right? That song is 6 days long.
I think it just finished.
I think it just finished. That is one of the longest songs that is I ever hear. And it comes on, I have a there's a great radio station here in Nashville. It's called Hippie Radio. I love it. It plays song. It plays 70s and 80s, but it's, you know, 60s, 70s and 80s. It's meant for my parents' generation, but I like the music a lot, so I have it on all the time. And they played the wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald one time, and I think I went from Spring Hill to almost bottom end of Nashville, which is like a 20-minute drive, and that thing was still going on. And then the cook came downstairs and told the soldiers, and we're going,
It answers that question. Have you ever decided to write a song while doing a history report?
Right, exactly. Yeah, that's a great point. That's a great point.
Because, I mean, you know all about it, right?
And the wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald. And you're like, oh, goodness gracious. And you just keep playing it and playing it, playing it. Then the water came in and they bucketed it out. But then the ship was all swaying in the wind. Oh, goodness.
Do you think he was trying to make a sea shanty?
I think he was. I think he was. Oh, goodness. I didn't. You know what's funny is I don't remember in any history class ever hearing about the wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald. And then I heard that song and I was like, what was that? And I remember going, oh, goodness, that's a real thing. That actually happened. He's not making that story up. They didn't teach me that in my history class. Maybe I went to a school that just ignored that and decided to teach something else. I don't know. That seemed like a big deal. Big ship going down in the 70s. Right in the Lake Erie or Lake Superior, I don't know.
Superior.
So Gordon.
Wow, there's a whole Wikipedia page on it. I'm gonna learn something right now.
You're gonna learn something about the wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald.
Yeah,
29. I think it was 29 men died on that wreck.
29 men died.
29. I think 29. The reason I know it's 29 because in the song he says it rang 29 times for each man on the Edmund Fitzgerald.
It was the entire crew.
Entire crew.
29 men.
29 men
during a storm. Mm-hmm.
Fellas, it's too rough to feed you. Fellas, it's good, nice to know you. Yeah, and Gordon Lightfoot. Listen, I'm not doing Gordon Lightfoot any justice on the show, by the way, this morning. So, man, oh, man, settling in for basketball tonight. So this is where there's no games in the afternoon. And then you settle in and you watch like kind of two games going on at the same time. One will start like half an hour to 40 minutes or so earlier. So you're almost at halftime, and then the other one will start, and you have it going on at the same time, and then one kind of blends into the other one, so the second game blends into the third game, and then the third game blends into the fourth game, and it's just this big potpourri that starts at like 6:30 Eastern and runs like past midnight.
Yeah, all the way through.
Yeah, so that's what you get from tonight. It's going to start with Michigan State against Kansas State, Arkansas, then UConn, Florida Atlantic and Tennessee, and then Gonzaga and UCLA. So you go. Tennessee trying to get to the Elite Eight for the first time since 2010. Florida Atlantic trying to get to the Elite Eight for the first time ever. So that's good. And by the way, don't sleep on that game. I know we get to this point. I was talking about this earlier this week where, okay, team, there's no surprises anymore. There's no teams that are going to jump out and bite you. If you are Creighton, you are studying Princeton like you would if you were playing Houston. Like, you are looking at every angle to beat Princeton. And you are taking them seriously because they won two games in the tournament. So you're not going to be like, well, it's Princeton. What do we got? Why do we even have to? No, Princeton is, they took care of their business and they could take care of you.
It was funny. I was talking to a dad last night. My son had a baseball game, and his daughter goes to Alabama, and his daughter's asking him, like, hey, if Alabama makes the Final Four, can you take me?
Oh.
You know, and so he said, well, we got to see if they get there first. That was his whole thing. But he kind of already wrote them off. He's like, you know, hey, we just got to get past San Diego State that we're in. And I'm like, you know, and he's like, you know, he was like, well, Creighton could be tough. And I was like, don't sleep on Princeton.
Hey, don't be careful. Be careful. They're showing that they can win these games. I mean, they beat Arizona and Missouri. Right?
Yeah.
Missouri made a good little run in the SEC tournament. They were playing pretty good basketball.
And they shot Arizona out of the gym.
So, again, you don't expect them to do anything. I get it. You know, we don't see double-seeded teams in the Final Four very often. But, you know,
no, in fact, have we ever had a 15 against a 1?
Have we ever had a 15 against a 1?
I don't think so.
I don't think we ever had. So Florida Atlantic is a 9. They won 31 games during the regular season. They play out of the Conference USA. And here's the thing about Florida Atlantic. They're small, but they're quick, and they're fast, and they're young. And that's the thing about Tennessee. Tennessee is not fast now. They don't have Zakai Ziegler. That's a big loss. I know I've been pointing this out pretty much since the tournament started, but there's a reason why he was important to this team. Tennessee needs Zakai Ziegler down the stretch if they want to win the national title, right? So if the goal for Rick Barnes, and it should be, given that they're a four seed and they were one of the top teams ranked in the country, but they're going to need, they were going to need Zakai Ziegler because, one, he controls the tempo, but two, he's really good at stealing the basketball. He's really good as a defensive guard, and they don't have him anymore. And so what they had to do against Duke was, we're going to play in the mud. Okay. Now here's the thing. Some teams actually like doing that. And so that's the problem, is that if that's the way you're going to try to win some games, well, you're now a big team that is slowing your tempo down. All right. That's the way, that's how Olivia Komwa had such a great game, 6'8" guy against Duke, right? Even hit some three pointers for crying out loud. That's how they were able to beat Duke. Get Duke out of their rhythm, slow that game down, drag it out with size. And Duke's a big team. I mean, Duke's got two guys that are 7 feet tall. But they were able to neutralize that and win this game. Now, picture that. Picture a team big, slowing the game down. Now picture their opponent. And their opponent is a team that's won 31 games. So they're not in this thing on a technicality. They're in this thing because they won their Conference USA tournament. And they won and they played really, they're a really good basketball team. But guards that are quick and can run. If you start noticing that the Owls are shooting the ball well and flying down the court, Tennessee is in trouble tonight. Tennessee will be in trouble tonight. Now, it doesn't mean they can't impose their will, but watch early in that game to see how Tennessee can flow that basketball game. If they can get that basketball game to a tempo that they want, because the Owls, that's how they're going to win this game. I'll be honest with you. I never hear when we get to this point, it is almost cliche, but it's still truth. Truth can still be cliched. When you've got a team from these mid-major conferences that are in the Sweet 16, Florida Gulf Coast, for example, there's always the one thing they do well that they have to do well because they can't win against a better team in any other way, right? So if you're Florida Gulf Coast, remember they were fast. They had an up-tempo team slamming the ball, right? They got you out of your rhythm. And that's how Andy Enfield at the time had that team winning. But when you take them out of the game, they don't have anything left. They're not two-dimensional. And it's always with these teams, always if the guards can shoot. It's always if they can shoot, hit their outside shot. You never hear them go, well, they got two big men and they play post basketball. It always feels like if these mid-major teams are going to make a bigger statement, they got to shoot. St. Peter's last year, the kid with the mustache, Eddard, forget his name, the kid with the mustache, is like, if he hits his shots, they can beat anybody. What if he can't? They're dead. They're dead in the water. And for the tournament run, they did. They did shoot their outside shots. That's how Florida Atlantic could beat Tennessee tonight. Getting it. But you want to talk about tempo? Watch out for Friday. San Diego State. That defense is really good.
I'm really excited for that one.
You should be. I think that's a
good matchup.
It's really a good matchup between, again, San Diego State over the last number of years has been known for its defense, and they will bottle you up and they will break you down, and they're really, really good. They're good at holding the basketball, but they're really good at getting you to forcing shots. They're really good at making you play a slower tempo game. San Diego State likes games in the 50s and lower 60s. That's the kind of games they play. But they average 70 points. Right, but they kept Furman and Charleston are in the 50s, right? That's if they can do that against Alabama, which is really hard to do. I mean, it's because Alabama, they score in the 80s. It's really hard to do, but if they can, this is where they'll win this game. This is how they'll win this game. I honestly think that they don't win a track meet against Alabama. They're not. I don't think they're built to win a mano a mano 87-85 basketball game. If Alabama gets in the 80s, they're going to win this game, right? They're going to win this game. But if this game is a slugfest, slow down what Tennessee had to do to Duke game, San Diego State's going to mean that their defense worked against Brandon Miller in Alabama, and they're going to win that basketball game. They're going to have a really good chance, at least, of winning that basketball game. All right, hour two is coming up next as we continue with Wake Up Call. We'll talk Arkansas basketball, and, of course, we've got the good, the bad, and the dumb on Twitter, @TonyDRadio, @RonCulver. That's Ron with two N's.